Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. I have two episodes which are going to be longer, which I would like to give to you, but currently, oh boy, the news and the work is getting, like, me super stressful. For my Latvian listeners, this is just a short message here. Klausieties podcastu pakluso, es tur biju intervijā, Laura Grēviņa tais lielus kraidījumu. And that's it. Thank you. Just I wanted to put this in there because apparently I have a lot of Latvian listeners lately as well. One thing that is great is that I've gotten Igor Girkin back. Yes, Mr. Strelkov, the great guy ever. And he has described the 24th day of war. He also used war in capital letters, even though using the term war is prohibited in the Russian Federation. But he's definitely not one of the more trustable, reliable sources. And I will now quote you directly what he had to say, since, well, I'm working on translating a bunch of documents, guys. I'm working on translating a bunch of documents, and I need the Putin's bio to make. I have a bunch of, I don't know, how do they call it in the IT sphere? Tech debt? I suppose I have a lot of tech debt going on, but I'm working on it. Anyways, Igor Strelkov on the 24th day of war. Quote, drip, drip, drip. Like water from a dripping pipe with this pill, like drip by drip, days go away. Together with time, which is invaluable or cannot be, like, replaced, there are lost lives every day and resources. In the front, there are just battles in very local, like, of local importance and local meaning. Besides Donbas, where the command spends in empty ventures the last available forces, which are bleeding of Dugansk and Luhansk infantry, so once and once again, time and time again, storming the enforced places of the Ukrainian army in Ajayevka and Marinovka. And I'm sorry for my awkward English here in these translations. It's just that I once again read these materials as they come in. And yeah, this is one of the things. If there would be another English translation on the internet, someone who had spent their time to translate this, I would use that one. Continuing on. And then already the planned, and also after a couple of hours of street fighting, retreat of Rubežnoye and Severodonetsk, of the so-called Ukrainian armies. He calls them so-called because that is, you know, he hates Ukraine with the terrible passion, which is why I like to use him as a source. And even though our generals like to name this a huge victory, this is the only thing that we have to say for two days about quick surrounding of Donetsk group of the Ukrainian army. Even the most optimistic, even over-optimistic general, propagandist Podlyakov, who can basically drip out and sniff out victory out of his own finger about anything and any purpose, yet even he is now worried about this. Russian forces have been stuck in everywhere. There is no mobilization. Mobilization will be political death for Putin. Yesterday, President, even in a word, did not even mention it. But without mobilization and a victory over the so-called Ukraine, we can't even think about at slova vapshe, which means, well, completely. So this isn't a pro-Ukrainian force again. This is Igor Girkin stating this. This is Igor Girkin, and this is him talking about the Russian forces. And if you listen to my episodes 8 and 9, you will learn quite well that this guy is one of those people who were super pro-war. And one thing that I wanted to mention is that I wrote a poem today. Because, you know, still nothing more to report. Well, the Russians, they sent 4,000 people from Mariupol away in Russia. You know, they basically deported 4,000 civilians, then they sent them to Russia. Yeah, because as safety measures, you know, you get packed into a bus and then you just get sent away. Also, I went to a film festival thing and I saw a movie about Srebrenica. And that reminded me about these buses packed with civilians, which was just awful. Fights are still going on. The front line is, well, calcifying, and I don't know when it's going to break. Either Russian surpluses and Russian troops will move on, or Ukrainians will get enough NATO weapons to blast through. We don't know. At this point, we do not know. I know that I'll be going there, and I wish I would be able to give you more wartime news. However, my Russian sources, and about the Russian sources, again, I have to state that I get Telegram messages, and some of your money that you have been sending to me via clicking the donate button on the easternborder.lv page, yeah, that goes to pay off my Russian sources in the military and in the administration, which I cannot name for their own safety, but I do have some. And because they want to eat. Their cards have been blocked, but they have Revolut cards. At least that's what I use to pay them. So I use Revolut to pay them about 50 euros, maybe sometimes 50 to 100 for their news. So just saying. Literally, if you want to know where your money goes to, I pay my sources off. And that is, of course, a criminal deed and very awful of me to do. But hey, it's the eastern border. I do what I can. This is what allows me to bring you the news. And these sources tell me that the news about Bortnikov, the current director of the FSB, being kind of the naslednik or the inheritor of the Putin's position is bullshit. The very idea that Ukrainian intelligence would have some info on the fact that there might be some coup, that's bullshit. If you hear news about a coup, that's total nonsense. If we're gonna have a coup once again, then we'll hear about it after it's gonna happen. Because Putin's super afraid of being poisoned. One other thing is that probably the one Putin that we saw in Luzhniki, that wasn't the real Putin, because obviously Putin's too afraid to go anywhere. That's why he has his big table, and now you imagine him going in front of a bunch of people. One argument that I would like to say is that when I heard from Maxim Katz, I heard that on the TV, but Russia and a lot of people who try to defend Russia have been using the argument that NATO is my main reason for this, because NATO expansion eastward threatened Russia. Yeah, he mentioned the argument that if that would have happened, then NATO would have attacked now. If NATO would have wanted to take over Russia, then this would be the moment when they would have attacked. And if you say, but nukes, well then, if you mention nukes as an argument, then you deny any NATO involvement whatsoever. Why? Because obviously, I mean, if nukes are a reason, then nukes were a reason before. So we have to discount nukes. And if we discount nukes, then this is the most logical point where NATO should attack Russia. But we haven't. And that alone proves that we never had any intentions, because this is the most reliable place to do that. But in all, well, don't have any good news, minor counterattacks and everything. At the same time, in Russia, it has been prohibited to purchase electronic devices and everyday everyday devices such as washing machines or refrigerators. You know, you can't buy phones or refrigerators with credit or with monthly installments. That has been prohibited now. Also, Russian ruble, if you look it up on Google, will show you currently about 110 rubles per dollar. However, inside of Russia, the price has been dropping and or increasing, depending on your currency, constantly. Because they're dealing with their own internal market, because they have been experiencing immense losses of foreign currencies. Also, they seem to lack plastic and plastic and cardboard, since those things are now considered a deficit. And one of the few things that I've really noticed is that 2 days ago, I went to the store, and one of the things that a lady asked me there, you know, was, where's the glass milk bottles? And I was like, I don't know. And then she asked the lady who, well, worked there. And turns out, you know, the person in the counter, she told that, well, why don't you get a normal plastic bottle of milk or a cardboard box? But the lady, you know, she was like about 65 or something. She responded with you can't make Molotov cocktails from cardboard. You need something that breaks. And that scares me. I mean, we have grannies now who do this. And in Ukraine, it's even worse. We got some news that the Ukrainian grandmother had gone to Russian soldiers and fed them some pirozhki. It's kind of like you take smoked meat, mostly pork, because we eat pork here, not beef. Put smoked pork inside of a pastry, and that's a pirozhok. Kind of like pierogi, but not really, but same thing, basically. And she had put rat poison in them. 8 people died. 8 Russian soldiers died. Now, if I was the husband of that Russian lady, I would be promising her I would never drink booze again or something of that sort. Because that's all insane. But yeah, war is continuing. Positions are calcifying. They're building defensive positions. Everything's happening. Sorry for not more concrete news. Oh, except one. You guys have so far donated 20,000 euros. If I mentioned this at the beginning, still want to mention this again. 20,000 euros. It's insane to Ukrainian charities. I'm so happy. If you also would like to help my show, then yeah, please click that donate button. And one bonus point, if you listen to my show from our homepage, theeasternborder.lv, instead of Spotify or anything else, you get it ad free. And we'll get edited episodes soon, for which we'll charge our patrons or something. And we'll get longer episodes, just that I'm a bit tired of the war and, you know, exhausted. And my guy in Latvia, whose name I won't mention because he asked me not to, he's constantly bashing me for not doing enough quality stuff, but I'll get to that. It's just that these episodes also every day take a lot of time. Normally I would be working like, I don't know, 36 hours per week for an episode. Now I have about 8 hours per day to make an episode. So sorry about that. But yeah, if you want to help me, go to patreon.com/theeasternborder and become our patron, or click the donate button on theeasternborder.lv. But what I like to end this episode with is my own rework of a poem, which I'm going to do and tell to people in the next episode. This is going to be a serious one, one of those. Maybe not the next one, but I'm working to get Dan Carlin on the show, you see. Dan Carlin and Michael from The Red Line. I'm going to get Michael and I'm going to get Dan. And when we all can come together, then I'm going to do a war in Ukraine thing. But I just read today a poem, sort of, by a Ukrainian poet. And, well, I've been studying Ukrainian these days because I know Russian very well. So I decided to spend some time studying Ukrainian. And he made something that I want to share with you a bit, because I have Well, you know how translating poems goes. It's not word for word, but this is what I did, you know, because I'm just a. If I claim to be a bard, then I have to do some poetry after all, right? So here's my take in English by Byodorkovsky. I don't have the name for this poem, but the poet's name is Byodorkovsky. So here goes nothing. An angry god awakens for all those slaughtered in Siberia, for those who were sent away barefoot, for all the women raped, for all the children slain. There we come. What horrors did it take to awaken an angry god? The god of our past, not the one who died on the cross, but the one for whom we slayed the bull stew and splattered our altars with blood. One that made a nation of farmers and plowers into a nation of murderers. For each death there shall be vengeance, and so this god takes its toll. He has awoken and he is gathering his harvest. He walks across Ukraine, and with his scythe, without mercy, he cuts down on the invader. He cuts down on those. For too long we haven't paid him his dues. Now we do. For we are angry, like an angry god. And what will put this god to sleep once again? And I don't know the answer to this question. До свидания, товарищ. Happiness is mandatory.